What color is a traffic light after it's green and before it turns red? It's yellow, right? Well, not so fast. When traffic lights were first introduced, they were in fact yellow, but nowadays the caution signals are mostly orange. If you still imagine them as yellow, it's because our habitual thinking sometimes gets in the way of our actual perceptions. It's one of the many cognitive bugs discussed in the new book, Thinking 101, How to Reason Better to Live Better, by Wukyang An. Wukyang is a professor of psychology at Yale University, and she teaches a popular course called Thinking. In the class, she encourages students to identify their own reasoning errors, freeing them to make better decisions in all areas of their lives. Now she's put her key insights into her first book, and she joins us today to share some of them.
My name is Wukyang An, and I'm a professor of psychology at Yale University. I teach a large course about thinking errors, and I wrote a book based on it. Here are five key insights. Insight number one, thinking errors can happen even when we mean well. Let's start with an error called confirmation bias. As the name says, it is a tendency to confirm what one already believes. Suppose a person thinks that echinacea cures the common cold, so he took echinacea whenever he felt a sore throat, and he usually got better within 2 or 3 days. The evidence he has gathered strongly supports his hypothesis, so it seems rational for him to keep believing that echinacea cures the common cold. But a critical piece of data is missing. What would happen if he does not take echinacea the next time he feels a sore throat? If he still gets better in a couple of days, his recovery likely has nothing to do with echinacea. But if this person never tests what would happen if he didn't take echinacea, then he is committing confirmation bias. And that is exactly how the medical malpractice of bloodletting persisted in Western society for 2,000 years. Clearly, the healers had good intentions. They wanted to cure sick people. And every time people got sick, they let this bad blood out, and most people got better. They didn't test what would happen without bloodletting. Confirmation bias can happen to anybody, even when trying to be correct and helpful. In my book, I discuss dozens of thinking errors. Another one is the planning fallacy. That's when we underestimate how much time, money, and effort it takes for us to complete a task. Almost everybody is guilty of it. There are examples of truly spectacular planning fallacies. Boston's Big Dig Highway construction project went $19 billion over budget and took 10 years longer than planned. The Sydney Opera House was initially budgeted at $7 million, but ended up costing $102 million, and it took 10 years longer than originally estimated. And that was for a scaled-down version. What is remarkable about the planning fallacy is that it happens even when it is in our best interest to make the most accurate estimate. Nobody wants to spend extra money and time because of poor planning, and it is obviously very stressful to miss deadlines and budget targets. Then why do we commit these thinking errors? Insight number two. It is because thinking errors are byproducts of cognitive systems that are adaptive. Let's start with an analogy. We evolved to crave high-calorie foods, which is wonderful for our survival when resources are scarce. However, the same drive to eat high-calorie foods can make us overweight. Many thinking errors happen because our cognitive systems evolved to solve problems that also help our survival. But then the same mechanism backfires under certain circumstances. To illustrate this, let's talk about an important cognitive mechanism called metacognition. This is knowing whether you know something, such as knowing whether you can swim. Even if you have not gone swimming for years, you can run a mental simulation for swimming, and if it feels fluent and easy in your head, that means you can swim. Metacognition is an essential part of our survival as it prevents us from attempting something that we cannot do, like trying to fly. Usually, things that feel easy in our mind are actually easy to do. So this feeling of fluency is a very useful clue for metacognition. However, when we rely on fluency for metacognition, it contributes to the planning fallacy that I just talked about. We plan by running a mental simulation of a task, and this typically runs more fluently in our minds than in reality. Suppose you're planning for holiday shopping and you come up with a list of people for whom you would like to buy gifts. Once you come up with a list of recipients and gifts, it makes the whole task feel like it will run smoothly. You just need to buy gifts for each one of these people. And that causes you to underestimate how long it takes to complete the task. Ironically, studies have shown that the more detailed and specific the plan is, the more feasible it looks, causing people to underestimate the completion time even more. As another example of how thinking errors are byproducts of adaptive cognitive systems, let's revisit the confirmation bias. Suppose you go to a supermarket 2 miles away from your house and you find that their apples are pretty good. Next time when you want apples, you could try a different supermarket to avoid the confirmation bias. But if you're satisfied with the apples that are good enough, you might as well go back to the first supermarket. It's more efficient and less risky, even though it is a type of confirmation bias. When our goal is to get by with things that are good enough, it's better to continue with what you know rather than exploring other uncertain possibilities. That is, confirmation bias is a byproduct of our need to save energy and lessen risk. After all, when we're happily married, we shouldn't divorce and try a different spouse just to overcome confirmation bias. So if the thinking errors are side effects of our highly evolved adaptive cognitive systems, can they really hurt us? Insight number 3. Thinking errors can have devastating consequences. We may think that many well-known thinking errors are simply amusing and benign, and that they are just trick questions devised by clever psychologists. But thinking errors are prevalent in daily life. Let's start with a benign example of my own confirmation bias. When my son was 4 years old, he asked me why a yellow traffic light is called a yellow light. I patiently told him that it's called a yellow light because it's yellow. Then he told me it's orange. As I wondered whether my husband neglected to tell me that he was colorblind, I told my son, no way. He insisted, Mom, just look at it. So I did, and indeed it was orange. But up until that point, I had been seeing it as yellow because everybody called it yellow. Next time you see a traffic light, take an objective look yourself. Yet, seeing an orange light as yellow doesn't really hurt anybody as long as I prepare to stop. In fact, when we perceive the world, we always interpret it based on what we already know. Otherwise, we cannot make any sense out of the world. But this adaptive cognitive mechanism also causes prejudice and stereotypes to persist in our society. In one study, the researchers examined the gender pay gap. The participants in this experiment were science professors at prestigious universities, and they were asked to rate a candidate for a laboratory manager position. All the professors who participated in this study were presented with the same resume, except that on half of them, the applicant's name was Jennifer, and on the other half, it was John. Even though Jennifer and John's credentials were identical, they rated John to be significantly more competent and hireable, and the average salary that they offered for John was about $3,500 or 13% higher than that for Jennifer. This sort of bias is particularly devastating because of a vicious cycle. When John gets hired, he'll probably do a good job, and that would make these professors continue to believe that men are better than women in science, the confirmation bias again. It is easy to see how the same thing can happen with other types of prejudice involving race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, you just name it. Here's another example of how thinking errors can have significantly negative consequences. It's called the framing effect. People are affected by the way options are framed. So 85% lean ground beef tastes leaner, healthier, and better than ground beef with 15% pure fat. And this framing effect can be a matter of life or death. In one study, when patients with lung cancer were told they had a 90% chance of surviving if they underwent a surgery, a large majority of the patients opted for the operation. But when another group of patients were told that they had a 10% chance of dying after the surgery, only half of them chose the surgery. Given that thinking errors can have devastating real-life consequences, can we reduce these errors? Insight number four. There are ways to reduce thinking errors. Before we talk about how to reduce thinking errors, let me first say what does not work. Merely learning about these errors and spotting them is not sufficient. It's just like insomnia. Anyone who suffers from insomnia knows that they can't sleep. But insomnia cannot be fixed by simply thinking, I should sleep more. One of the solutions that I propose is to take advantage of these thinking fallacies. For instance, since we're affected by the way questions are framed, we should ask the same question in two different frames. For example, a study showed that when people were asked how unhappy they were with their social life, they judged themselves to be less happy than when they were asked how happy they were. To avoid being affected only by one frame, we can ask ourselves both questions. The truth probably would be close to the average of the two answers. Similarly, we can avoid confirmation bias by exploiting our tendency to confirm the hypothesis. We just need to confirm two versions of the same hypothesis. Suppose a person believed that men are good at science, and this person has collected plenty of evidence confirming this hypothesis. Afterwards, the person should also test the other side of the same hypothesis. That is, according to this person's belief, women must be bad scientists. To confirm this belief, the person should check what happens if women are given an opportunity to become scientists. Then the person would end up finding that women can be good scientists when given an opportunity. And that is evidence that disconfirms the original hypothesis. Insight number five, trying to be perfectly rational is irrational. In order to make the most rational and optimal choices, we must search for as many possible options as possible. And individuals vary widely in how much they maximize the kinds of searches they need to make throughout their lives. Some people are always on the lookout for a better job even when they are satisfied with their current one, fantasize about living a different kind of life, or write several drafts of even the simplest letters and emails. On the other hand, others do not experience much difficulty shopping for a gift for a friend, easily settle for what is satisfactory, or don't agree that one has to extensively test a relationship before committing to it. Interestingly, studies have found that those who tend to maximize their search tend to make more money, but are less happy than those who don't. When people do not obsess over their search for a perfect solution, they can settle down and enjoy what is good enough. Recently, grit and growth mindset have been mentioned a lot as important virtues. I agree, but sometimes too much self-regulating can hurt us. In one study, participants varying in their desire for self-control were presented with a heinous task of typing in statements written in foreign language, with the additional challenge of having to skip the letter E and not using the spacebar. You may predict that those who valued self-control would do better than those with a low desire for self-control, right? Nope. Those with a high desire for self-control performed worse. Why did that happen? The people with a strong desire for self-control quickly realized the gap between what they strive for, that is being perfect, and their actual performance. When their goal appears to be unreachable because the task was so hard, they put in less effort and ended up giving up rather than doing their best. Like everything in life, moderation is key when dealing with our numerous reasoning errors. We certainly won't and can't fix everything. At the same time, it also won't hurt to spend a little more time individually and together, learning about thinking errors, talking about how we can do better, and not trying to be perfect when it's fine to be good enough. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy thinking.
Thank you, Wook-Young. That was Wook-Young On with 5 Big Ideas from Thinking 101, How to Reason Better to Live Better. If you like this, check out our book bite for Adam Grant's Think Again, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.